OLTU.com, the home of quality podcasts.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 193 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and we're back for 2012, and got a great interview lined up this evening with none other than Sue Bryce. But before that, I just quickly wanted to mention, unless you were living under a rock, you're probably aware that last week, Adobe released a public beta of Lightroom version 4. If you haven't checked it out already, go and do so. They're doing some amazing stuff with it. I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can download it from labs.adobe.com. And Julianne Koch, who's sort of like their main ambassador, if you will, for Lightroom, has done some videos which are on YouTube, and they are definitely worth checking out because they highlight some of the new features. One of the things that I think is really interesting is that they are including a photo book publishing module within Lightroom that's linked to Blurb. If you're not familiar with Blurb, they're a sort of independent book publishing operation on the web. So you can actually do your photo book layouts in Lightroom, publish it straight to PDF, upload to Blurb, and, you know, days or a week or two later, you get your book back in the mail. So there's some great stuff coming. So definitely go and grab the download. It's a fully functioning version of the beta as it currently stands. Obviously, not all of the, you know, code is final yet. The only restriction, if you will, is that you cannot upgrade your existing Lightroom 3 catalogs to a Lightroom 4 catalog yet. That is something Adobe always does during a beta phase. They don't allow you to upgrade your existing catalog simply because the catalog format itself has new features which are not entirely locked down during the beta phase. Once Lightroom 4 ships, then, you know, all of those things will be locked down and you will be able to upgrade your existing Lightroom 3 catalogs to a Lightroom 4 catalog. What Adobe is suggesting in the meantime is, you know, grab a handful of your RAW files or your JPEGs, whatever it is that you shoot, and actually copy them to a new folder somewhere else on your computer, and then import those copies into a Lightroom 4 catalog, just so that you can play, you know, with the Lightroom 4 beta and get your head around some of the fun stuff that they're doing. All right, you've been waiting very patiently. Let's bring her on. Sue Bryce, welcome to Shutters Inc.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Really great to have you along. For those who don't know you, and I will confess, I don't know a lot of your story. All I know is that you have, on at least two occasions, been awarded Australian Portrait Photographer of the Year. Has it been more than twice?
No, only once in Australia and once in New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So I was slightly getting my story crossed. When I spoke with you about you coming on the podcast as a guest, I fielded the question out to some of my listeners and said, look, if you had the ear of Sue Bryce, what would you ask her? And as you can imagine, I got some questions. So are you okay if I fire these questions at you and I give you the opportunity to respond?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. First one from Chris. He said, Sue seems to have a particular affinity for shooting other women, and the ones that have been shot by her rave about her. So she obviously relates to women particularly well. So my question would be, what's her process for engaging with her clients and subjects? I understand the initial consult meeting is an important part of it, but I feel there's a lot more to it than that. How does Sue relate to her subject, get inside their head to fully understand what that person is all about, pose them, and then translate that to her imagery? When world-class photographers like Tamara Lackey rave about her, there is a lot more to her process than just shutter speeds and ISO.
Yeah, I actually met Tamara in a bar in Vegas, and she's been a friend ever since. And, you know, I genuinely like women. So I don't feel that, you know, some women have that competitiveness. I prefer to be in the company of men, women don't like me sort of thing. I have a really, really strong relationship with my mum, and I have two best friends that I've had since I was 14 that are still my best friends.
Awesome.
All these years later, you know, 26 years later. And I just genuinely, I feel like I can look at other women and say that they're really beautiful, and I don't feel that competitiveness thing. So I just, you know, I'm a friendly female. I don't know. I don't have that thing, you know, that some girls get.
That's such an unusual thing to hear from someone who is obviously a successful business person, because you always, or at least I always think of successful business people as being really competitive. So that's...
Oh, I'm incredibly competitive in everything I do. Like, I want to win at everything I do, but I just don't ever look at other women and genuinely don't think, you know, that I don't know, you know, that thing that I don't know what that thing is that some people have. I don't have that.
Well,
so
I would venture then that what you possess is actually a lack of bitchiness. Would that be a reasonable assessment?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think I could be a bitch if I wanted to be, or everybody is capable of being a bitch. But I genuinely care about the journey that they come on when they come into my studio, because regardless of who they are or how old they are or how curvy they are or how bad their self-esteem is, absolutely regardless of all of that, when they come to me and they stand in front of the camera, people get stripped bare very quickly in their personal self when they're in front of the camera. And I believe that I take control of the situation no matter who they are. So I feel very comfortable in the fact that I can connect with them and make them feel beautiful just by talking to them and taking control of the situation and allowing their subconsciousness to come forward, but at the same time, not countering it, but just giving them a feeling of I'm in charge, it's okay, you're safe, I'm going to make you look incredible. And that just sort of all ties into an experience. The weird thing is, and I was just telling a client the other day, it's not actually pleasurable being photographed. I don't think anybody really enjoys it. But when they see the images, they always remember the shoot as being a lot more amazing than it was. You know, so they'll say, it was the most incredible experience. And I was like, really? Because I was there and you were kind of difficult and a little bit, you know. But they remember it as being incredibly different because they can't see what I can see when I'm taking the photograph. So it's all in my hand at that stage. Yeah.
I wonder if that response is just the personification of a studio shoot done absolutely perfectly right, in that the end result sort of fosters an even better memory of the event than the event actually warranted.
Well, I guess at the time of being shot, they're very unsure.
Yeah.
So what it does is it cements this sureness inside them that, of course I was in control, and of course she got it, and of course I looked incredible, and oh my God, look at me now. And it does colour, I guess, the situation a little bit. But to cut a long story short, I just love photographing. I just love photographing women. You know, sometimes they can be so incredibly painful when it comes to getting through all of the stuff that we, you know, we find ourselves. But I like that challenge, and I like, you know, and I've got hundreds of female friends, and I like, you know, I just generally like hanging out with women, and they're good company and fun, and yeah. Long answer, sorry about that.
no, that's fine. I wonder, are you in a unique position, do you think, against male studio owners, in that you somehow seem to be able to, I guess, approach your client with, I don't know if empathy is the right word, but you understand them and you relate to them really well. But in your own words, you also take control of that situation. I wonder, are guys at a disadvantage to try and play the same cards?
You know, that's not true, because I was taught by a man.
Okay.
And I, my first boss when I was 22 years old was a male glamour shooter, and he genuinely liked women, and he had a very easy comfort around girls. He had, you know, two sisters and a mum that he was really close to, and he was very comfortable around women, and he was very easy around our female clients. I don't think it was a man-woman thing. The one thing that keeps coming up in my workshops is not the men not understanding what it feels like to be vulnerable and, you know, to feel self-conscious in your body and all the girly stuff that we have. All the men get that because they have girlfriends and wives that go on about their thighs and whatever. The men know all that. They don't really care, but they know it. What the men always are really shocked at my workshops is when I describe to them the feeling that we have when we feel beautiful. And the guys just literally, they can't believe it. They're like, can you say that again? And I'm like, you know that feeling where you just feel beautiful, and I describe it to them, and they always ask questions about it because they're intrigued as to how they get women to that place where they just feel so beautiful.
So, yeah. Without wanting to steal your bread and butter, are you able to share with us what it is that women, you know, how is it that makes them feel beautiful, and what is that different thing?
You know, I don't actually believe it's anything I do. It's so bizarre. It's probably it's more a matter of that it's not something that they become when they're in front of you. It's something that they reveal. So everybody has all this guard up around them. You know, they have, everybody has this sort of gorgeousness. I could describe it in one way. Have you ever seen an ugly bride?
No.
No, why? Because for one day, she can walk into the room and be the most beautiful woman there.
Yeah.
For one day, 200 people will walk up to her and tell her she is the most beautiful woman in the room. She's probably dieted. She's probably had her facials and her nails done for weeks before she got married. She's in love. She's happy. She is wearing the most magnificent dress in the entire event, and everybody is looking at her. So she is allowed for one day just to be the most beautiful woman in the room, and nobody's going to look at her or put her down or tell her she's not, or, and she's not going to get that feeling of I can't shine today, or I shouldn't be so full of myself, or I have to be careful, or she just looked at me that way, or whatever. She's just herself, and she's radiating her own beauty. That is in everybody. So if you can just bring that forward, like a safe place in your studio where you can just let them be the center of attention and just make them understand that it's safe to do so, that I not only want them to be the most beautiful woman in the room, I'm going to tell them and get them to experience that. And so then I just take photos of them. It's really that simple.
So you make it sound like it is simply a matter of compliments, obviously tastefully directed compliments. Am I right so far?
Yeah, keep going.
But then it brings me back to my earlier question. Like, can a guy pull that off as convincingly, or does it just sound smarmy and sleazy if it's a guy, you know, saying to the, you know, the woman that's posing in front of him, "Oh, you look fantastic." Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So here's the trick: I don't tell people they look fantastic. I don't tell my clients that they're thin or gorgeous or that they have hot legs. Or I don't compliment body parts, because that's not who a person is. Those are just things that you have. And everybody will find somebody with longer legs and, you know, a smaller bum and better skin and a nicer tan and better hair. There's always somebody better than you, thinner, younger. You know, when I tell somebody they look beautiful, I look in their eyes when I say it.
Right.
And I don't say, you look beautiful, or your dress. You know, I might say that is a beautiful dress, but I will always look at my clients. And when they finally, you know, just relax and I can see them starting to trust me and they're really bringing themselves forward, I always look at them straight in the eye and just say, you know, you're an incredibly beautiful woman, or something that's very genuine.
Yeah.
And I say it about them, not what they look, not what they're wearing, or, you know, something they have. So I don't believe you compliment somebody by their body type or their body size or anything about that. That's superficial.
I think that there is the crucial thing, isn't it? It's, as you say, it's about looking deep into their eyes and talking about who they are as an entity rather than just as a physical shape.
You know, I you have to. I teach my staff to compliment sincerely. There's a bit of a joke in the studio for 20 years. I had a nickname. They call me Sugar Mouth. Yeah, but in saying that, I can look at somebody and genuinely compliment them. And when I taught my makeup artist this, I say, you know, I want you to genuinely compliment the clients, and I want you to look them in the eye when you say it. And one day we had this very difficult client. She was a real rat bag, and she caused so much trouble with everybody, and she was really difficult to shoot. And I struggled the whole time to not only connect with her, but to pay her a compliment. And at the time, I was quite stressed out. And as she was leaving, I said to her, oh, my goodness, I won't say her name. Oh, my goodness, that is the most beautiful handbag I've ever seen. And she turned and she told me the story about how she bought this handbag. And I remember thinking, sometimes it's hard to pay a genuine compliment to somebody. Every now and then it's hard, but you can always find something, something
that even they can relate to. Yeah.
You know, surely everybody, you know, but don't ever be false. And I'd rather say nothing than pay a false compliment to someone.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to the next question. This is from Adam. He said, nice work, Bruce. I love listening to Sue. Sue is known for her ability to make her clients comfortable in front of the camera and to get them posed to highlight their physical assets while hiding and minimizing any flaws they may have. So any posing tips she can pass on would be greatly appreciated. Sue also travels a lot and often brags about her ability to get large amounts of gear on as carry-on luggage. I would love to know how she gets away with this, as I get bailed up by check-in staff every time I fly with camera gear. And if there's any time to pick her brain on selecting and processing her competition prints, and if being Portrait Photographer of the Year has helped her business any. So there's about four questions in there.
Yeah. Okay. The first one being weight on the back foot. Push the weight always on the back foot away from the camera. Chin forward and down. Bring the chin forward. And I mean, Tyra Banks on America's Next Top Model calls it the turtle. When you push your chin forward, not your shoulders, your chin forward and down. Anybody, no matter what their curviness, will have no double chin if they're pushing and projecting their chin forward and down.
Right.
And if they're turned 45, weight on the back foot. I just got the new Think Tank Airport Light. I try to conceal about 17 kilos of camera equipment on my person. Every now and then I get busted. But I just found that when I check in, I don't put that bag forward ever. Yeah. And every now and then I get weighed by the little rent-a-cop that's up by customs. But I've probably only ever been busted once or twice. But all the boys tell me that they have the backpack think tanks, and they say once it's on their back, nobody ever weighs it. They only weigh the wheelie ones because they look heavy. So I bought the backpack think tank this Christmas, and I haven't taken it yet on a trip, but I did take it to a shoot. And I mean, obviously, I'm not that strong. So after about 10 minutes of walking to a cab, waiting for the cab, getting in the cab, I was so sick of lifting that bloody weight. I thought, there is no way I'm walking through an airport with that sort of backpack on my back. So I don't know. There's nothing you can do about it. Just cut your kit right down to what you need, what's functional, and try and conceal it behind your back and smile at people, because then they'll look at your eyes instead of looking at your bag. don't look guilty. And as for the winning Portrait Photographer of the Year, has it helped my business? No, I don't think awards help your business. I think awards are creative masturbation, or public masturbation, I call it. I believe it's to get noticed in our industry. It's probably for your own credibility. I just think it's an incredibly fun experience to create something visually in your mind, shoot for it, prepare it, retouch it to a point where you know that it's going to score silver or gold, and then put it forward to be judged by your peers. It's exhilarating. It is the most fun you can have as a professional photographer, to keep advancing yourself as a photographer. And I'm so addicted to it. It's not even funny. And I love it. But, yeah, I don't think it gets me work. Yeah.
So. Are you not nervous when you're putting your competition entries together?
I used to be for... I've been entering for 9 years now, so I've won 4 national categories, and this year I got 8 golds, and I'm, so I kind of, for the first time, reached a point where I'm like, wow. But what I did this year was, instead of, you know, putting it together with all the stress and going, I hope I'm good enough, I just focused instead on just loving the work so much, and I didn't really care if it won or not. I loved it, and it didn't matter what anybody else thought. So
that's,
I know that
a great that attitude to have.
I look at, and it sounds like total bullshit, but the truth is that I actually thought, if I just put I just loved my folio so much. I was so proud of it, and I had no stress creating it. I actually took 2 weeks off to do it. So
wow.
It didn't just, you know, each of those images took me 20 hours, including shooting and retouching. So it didn't just happen overnight, and it wasn't magic. I gave it everything I had, and, you know, I got rewarded for it, which is really cool. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I'm so proud of what I created this year. That is more of a win for me than getting, you know, a crystal trophy.
Yeah. That's lovely to hear. That is really lovely to hear. Another one from Chris. He said, Sue shoots a 1D Mark IV, awesome choice in brackets, but conventional wisdom would suggest perhaps a full-frame, high-megapixel camera like a 5D Mark II might be more, quote-unquote, appropriate. So curious as to her thought process here. Sue will more than likely recognise this question.
The thought process was quite simple. The 5D Mark II is a brilliant camera, and I own it, and I always have owned it. But as I was starting to stand up on the international stage, somebody challenged me one day and said, I haven't spent the money on my kit. You know, it makes me look like an amateur instead of a professional, and the 5D Mark II is not classed as a professional camera. And at the time, I had been toying with buying the 1D Mark IV anyway, and I did purchase it. It is a lot of money, and it's a great camera. Did I need to replace, or did I need that over my 5D Mark II? Look, I'm going to be really honest and say no. Could I have bought a second 5D Mark II? And sure. Only because for what I do, I don't need to have a bigger, better, faster camera. I didn't need to do that. In saying that, I'm very proud of the 1D Mark IV. I love using it. It's a beautiful camera. But the 5D Mark II, outstanding for HD video. It's just unbeatable. I don't even think Canon had any concept of how incredible that camera was going to be when they introduced the HD video into the 5D Mark II. But, you know, brilliant, brilliant camera. And all the Nikon users are going, boo.
Probably. I'm the black sheep of the family because I shoot Sony, so.
Oh, sorry. We might have to end this call.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I can speak to you now that I know that you shoot cinema cameras.
It's because I used to be a Minolta shooter, and so.
Well, so did I. My first camera was an Minolta X300, was it?
Right. Okay. That's probably before I. I don't know.
My first,
I wasn't going to say that. No, I'm a bit older than that. But my first camera wasn't until the Dynax 7000.
Oh, really?
So that was sort of early 90s. So, yeah, anyway. I had a question there and I completely lost it. But anyway, shall move on to the next question. This is from Lee. Only two I can think of at the moment is what, in Sue's opinion, creates the moment for that truly awesome portrait? And has she ever had that one moment, a light bulb moment, an epiphany, which changed or altered the way she looked at a subject or the way she captured the images that she takes?
The first question.
So what, in her opinion, creates the moment for that truly awesome portrait?
It's like you can start working with somebody and some people sort of reveal themselves to you in about 3 minutes. Other people take about 40 minutes. But it's suddenly when it just this mask goes down, they fully trust you. They'll let you guide them. And they'll let the direction becomes really fluid, and all of a sudden you just start just seeing beautiful images coming through. That is such a neat moment. And my makeup artist in New Zealand, Maria, she always used to laugh because she said when that happened I would make different noises, and she'd okay. Like, because I'll talk and I'll sort of grunt behind the camera what I'm seeing away there. But she said she can always tell when I go into that place where I'm like seeing something really cool. So that, I think that's awesome. Second question?
And the second half of it was, has Sue ever had that one moment, an epiphany, which changed or altered the way she looked at a subject?
Well, I did do one thing for many years. I've been a photographer for 22 years. Mm-hmm. Let's say for the first 12 years or even 14 years, I was an anomaly because my genre had died. So people weren't very generous towards me with my work. So nobody ever told me I was that good or anything like that. I just sort of used to photograph my clients, and I would try desperately to keep this genre, this glamour genre, alive at a time where everybody told me not to do it. And I think what happened one day was, I guess what I thought I did was quite shallow. I thought being a glamour photographer was about just making people look pretty on the outside. And then I just photographed this family, and they were the most beautiful family you've ever met in your life. And being with them for the day made me feel like I was part of their family. And then their father died, I think, about 3 weeks after the shoot.
Right.
That was really changing for me as a photographer, because I was about 30 and I just suddenly got it. I just thought, oh, my God, what we do for people is, it's out of this world. We just stop time and we create these beautiful memories that are just priceless. No amount of money in the world could have taken that family portrait away. And I remember being significantly altered by that shoot.
So the father you refer to there was part of the shoot?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So I photographed all the women together, this beautiful family, and the mother and the two daughters and the daughter-in-law and then the three granddaughters. I did a full day session just glam with all of the women, and at the end all of the men and the boys arrived.
Yep.
And I just did this beautiful session with the individual families within that group, and then a large family group. It was 13 in the end, the whole group, and they were the most beautiful people, every single one of them. You know, just the way they were just the most beautiful people. And, yeah, and so I do remember being significantly altered by that moment. But I found my genre really early on, so I don't remember a light bulb moment where I was like, I want to shoot glamour. There were three choices: shoot babies, shoot weddings, shoot glamour, and I was not going to do babies and weddings. So I was like, ooh, yuck.
Yeah.
So I found my genre pretty quickly. It just took a long time for it to become popular again.
Yeah. Do you know Shelton Muller in Melbourne?
Yes.
Yeah, and his business partner Glyn, they've started a thing called Creative Photo Workshops, and in their workshops, Glyn always talks about, because Glyn spent about, I think, 25 or 30 years in camera retail, and he always talks about how whenever someone comes to his house, he always shoots a portrait of them, no matter who it is. And he said he got to that point simply because, he said, working in camera retail, so often you'd see people, they come in with this photo and they'd point to this one guy right in the background of the photo, and he's like, you know, tiny in the photo, and they'd say, can you blow this up to A4 and crop it down to him?
That was my dad, yeah.
You know, and yeah. And he said, you know, you just never know when your time's up, and sometimes that's the last and best photograph that anyone's got of the person, you know? And so, yeah, it's interesting to hear you tell pretty much the same story.
But I would rather it be more about more than a record or a nostalgia. I'd rather be more about a celebration of who you are right now than this is going to go on my coffin later.
Yeah,
but
for
the
sure.
The truth is,
sure,
is at the end of the day, just the power of what we do, you know, when you can, every one of those family members bought a 30 by 40 inch print of the group shot, and they framed it, each one of them have it in their home, and it became this icon, this, you know, they just, it was the most beautiful shot. And it was just one of those perfect moments. But the truth is one day I was quite young. I would have been in my mid-20s. I was up in the studio in Ponsonby in Auckland, and this really odd woman walked in. She looked a little bit sort of homeless, a little bit rough, and she kind of just ran up the stairs and then ran towards me, and she was holding this bit of paper, and she was shaking, and she said, I just want you to know something. And I said, sure. And she said, I was just looking at your photos outside and they're really beautiful. And I said, oh, thank you. And she said, this is my son, and showed me a photo of a kid at school, you know, like a school photo. He's wearing a school uniform, and he would have been about 14.
Right.
And she said, he died last year. And I looked at her and I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. And she said, yeah, he was 23.
Oh. That was the most recent thing she had?
I don't know. And I just looked at her and she just walked off. And I remember just standing there thinking, and you know, it's such a morbid thing to say to your potential clients, but it's more to value what it was that I was doing, to value, you know, just to value what I did and value what I charged for what I did, and that it was valuable to someone. I think that was an important lesson to learn. Anyway, yes.
Absolutely. Well, that's the end of the questions from my end. There is just one comment that was from Natalie, who you have met, I think. She said, I've seen Sue speak 3 times now and spent some time with her also. Okay, yes, so you have met her. I think Sue is amazing. Watching her speak answered lots of my questions. She is unique, unbelievably talented, and a really great person as well. Bruce, I hope you do get her on Shutters Inc. She's an incredible speaker and an inspiration for all. Sorry I can't help any more than this, but just to say, everyone should somehow see Sue speak at some point.
Cool.
So that's a lovely endorsement.
That's very nice, yeah. It's, you know, there aren't many female speakers in our industry. There's a lot of male speakers.
Yeah.
And I never had any intention of speaking publicly. I was one of those people that were really crippled by public speaking. And it was canon when I came to Australia 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
It was canon that asked me.
Really?
And at the time, I couldn't, you know, when you go to a workshop and you have to stand up and say, hi, my name's Sue, and I'm an alcoholic, you know, or I would stand up and literally my voice would quaver and I start crying. Like, I would stand up and go, hi, my name's Sue, and I'm a photographer, thank you, you know. And I just was like, ugh, how am I going to do this? And I read this book. There's a little book, and it takes about an hour to read, by Paul Arden, called It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be, I think it is. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. And the first thing I read when I opened the book, and I bought it for like $12, was don't give a speech, put on a show.
Nice.
And I just thought to myself, I don't have to do a presentation. I just have to put this together. It's got to be articulate. It's got to be funny. I've got to give genuine information on how people can learn and make money, because why else would you go to a talk? Some people just stand up and talk about nothing and they teach you nothing and they waffle on about themselves and you just think, I don't care that your mother bought you a camera when you were 7. You know, tell me how to make money doing this, or if you're good at taking photos, tell me how you do that so I can then go and do that. But people get really protective over what they have. Well, it took me 20 years to become me. So if you become me in, say, 3 talks, then you deserve to become me because you've obviously worked very hard at it, and I applaud you. But nobody can ever become you anyway, so just being honest makes all the difference. And I think I just stood up and said, this is how I built a business from zero to, you know, $800,000 a year in turnover in 3 years. And everyone just, you could literally see all the mouths open.
Yeah.
And I just told the truth. And I've enjoyed that so much. For as long as people want to hear me speak, I'm happy to keep speaking. So very cool. I mean, what a great honor. Loving every minute of. And I'm about to travel for 6 months too and speak in 5 different countries. So,
wow. So yes. What's happening in your studio at home? You're never there.
I have booked myself in every country I go to. I've booked myself 2 weeks.
Right.
And I have booked shoots before and after every talk that I do.
Right.
So I will work and shoot for the next, from February the 8th till June, I will work and shoot.
Just won't be at home in your studio at home.
Yeah, just will be on location, yeah.
What a great lifestyle.
Hey, can't complain.
Now, were there any questions? You said that you had some questions pouring in through Facebook. Were there any that you particularly wanted to address?
No. The questions I get are pretty much... all things that people have asked me, you know, that you've already asked me. I mean, right. I get the same questions a lot. What's your favorite f-stop? Where do you buy your polystyrene backdrops from? By the way, if you want to know where to order polystyrene sheets, you just Google polystyrene sheets and ring about 8 companies, because that's what I did. I don't even remember the name of the place where I bought them, but I bought some in Melbourne and some in Brisbane, and it always makes me laugh. I get that question all the time, or, you know, American people listening will ask where I get the polystyrene from, and I'm like, I don't live in America, so I have no idea, but Google is magnificent. I get those same sort of questions. Every now and then somebody throws me a curveball, but it's pretty much, you know, same sort of thing.
No, we try and steer away from asking questions like what ISO and shutter speed do you shoot at, because that's pretty generic information, you know. Yeah, just because Sue Bryce, you know, shoots 100 ISO at, you know, 125th at f/2.8 doesn't mean I can use the same settings and get the same photos, because there's so much more to it. So
yeah.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure.
Where can people check out your work?
My blog is very active. I blog 2 to 3 times a week, and I try and put as much information on it as possible. My blog is inbedwithsue.com.
Great title for a blog. I love that.
It is, yeah. So lots of people make jokes about hopping in bed with me, or they've been in bed with me, or they've been in bed with Sue all day, or, you know, and my website obviously is suebryce.com. But if you wait another week, it's about to amalgamate and become one great site. So that's pretty exciting. I've got about 25 new training products going on a new website. But my blog really is, I try not to rant or rave on it too much, and I don't waffle on about other things. I try to stay on point to some degree. And I've built a really neat following through my blog. So I've watched that build over the last 18 months, and that's been really fun.
And of course, you're on Facebook. Are you on Twitter as well?
I am. I'm Sue Bryce. I'm Sue_Bryce on Twitter, and Sue Bryce, a personal page on Facebook, but I have opened that up to photographers. I don't have a Like Me page, because managing a website's enough,
yeah,
or two websites is enough.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm always sort of accessible through all of those mediums at all times, because when I'm not shooting, I'm in front of the computer. So, yeah.
Do you know what? The question that eluded me a little earlier has come back to me. It was the video that you posted a week or two ago with a client whose name I think was Natalie.
Yes.
Was that shot with your 5D Mark II?
It was shot with the 1D Mark IV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, as so, in the video, no. The video was shot?
Yes, the video was shot with 5D Mark IIs.
Yep.
That's Abraham Joff from Untitled Filmworks. Abraham would be probably the foremost wedding cinematographer in Australia at the moment.
Right.
And he's based in Sydney. Everyone knows Abe. He's very well known. The quality of his work is exceptional. Oh, his wedding cinematography is out of this world.
Is it?
And, yeah, you can check out Untitled Filmworks on Vimeo. They've just posted a few really amazing videos. He shoots all of his kit as 5D Mark II. I've been on shoots with him. He has about 30 lenses, primes and zooms and just unbelievable amount of equipment. He's got 5 shooters that work for him, and they also edit for him. And very cool guy, very, very professional. And look, the video aspect of what we do, it is the future of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that you're all going to become cinematographers or videographers. I just mean in terms of education for the internet, in terms of advertising your business by having video on your website. It increased my bandwidth on my website by 32 gig a month. So that makes me search engine and, you know, Google rating a lot higher than what I was rating without having video. Also, I'm about to shoot a video at the end of this month with Hayley Bartholomew from You Can't Be Serious in Brisbane, and she is just outrageously amazing as well. Her and Abe, I think, are leading Australia. You know, people just don't seem to understand yet how important the video aspect is. YouTube has now become the second biggest search engine in the world after Google.
Yeah.
So if somebody finds out about you, they search you on Google and then they search you on YouTube. 68% of teenagers are now watching YouTube instead of TV.
Yeah, I'd believe and that.
The video medium and the ability to connect for free to a public is just getting bigger and bigger, so jump on board as soon as you can.
That is a very interesting insight, Sue. Very interesting, yeah.
It's cool.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you once again. I won't hold you up any longer. I appreciate you sharing your time and your wisdom with us. And
my pleasure.
Yeah. We'd love to catch up in the future. Hopefully, next PMA, I'll bump into you or something. I'll come and say hello.
Yes, I'll be in Melbourne. So just so you know, I am actually sitting on my bed, so you technically have been in bed with Sue for the last half hour.
Fantastic. Sue Bryce, thank you very much and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out ShuttersIncPodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audio2you.com.